Gore's Democratic Talk Radio is sponsored in part by www.algoreisourpresident.com. AlGoreIsOurPresident.com is a sponsor of Democratic Talk Radio, not because the election was a close one, nor because Al Gore didn't prevail, or even because we are unhappy with the Republican administration, which we are. Rather, we are a sponsor because we believe Al Gore did win both the popular vote and the electorate. His rightful victory was denied, however, as the final tally of votes was circumvented by the Supreme Court, when they halted the legal hand count, thus giving the White House to their own personal choice for president. Democracy was dealt a terrible blow. Our goal is a simple one, to be a positive voice for those who support our truly elected president, Al Gore, to share articles, full motion campaign video, some great downloads, and a few laughs, to help us remember our president and the positive things he would have worked so hard to accomplish for us. We also offer a full line of re-elect Gore in 2004 merchandise items, to keep a future Al Gore presidential run both visible and tangible, like t-shirts, bumper stickers, pins, and much, much more to come. Please visit us at www.algoreisourpresident.com. Our website, as well as the Democratic Talk Radio website, was designed by Accent Design Studios, which can be reached at www.accentdesign.com. AlGoreIsOurPresident.com wishes to thank them and you for your support of our site and all Democratic efforts wherever they may be.
My name is Al Lawrence with my co-host, Stephen Crockett.
Welcome.
Thanks for joining us here on Democratic Talk Radio on this Saturday, 30th day of March. And, of course, we always have a lot to talk about. Plus, we'll be bringing you an interview here in just a few minutes on Democratic Talk Radio. But before we get started, I would like to welcome our new League of Listeners to Democratic Talk Radio down at in Jacksonville, Alabama. We are just got picked up by a new station down there, WNSI. In Jacksonville, big 50,000-watt AM station, 810 on your AM dial. We'd like to welcome those listeners to Democratic Talk Radio.
Yeah, that's a really great. People from Alabama and Georgia will be joining our Tennessee listeners and all of our other listeners on the Internet.
On the Internet.
Will listen to us from www.democratictalkradio.com.
It's a great little website, I must say so myself, and it's not that little either. It's really expanded. We've worked very, very hard on it. Stephen is just gone above and beyond the call of duty on that website, and we are just immensely proud of it.
Yeah, we want to thank our webmaster, Accent Design.
Right.
They did a great job recently of redesigning our site. We have a lot of new programs and interviews. It's worth your while to take a stop and a little bit of time when you're visiting and surfing around the Internet to look at it, and also check out the new letters and column feature.
Right.
Democratic Voices is now going to be carried on there, and some of our old letters to the editor, things that listeners all over the country have been reading in their local newspapers. Mm-hmm. We've actually faxed over the last year that Al and I have been doing this, almost every newspaper in America, several columns and letters, somewhere in the neighborhood of 100,000 pages of text were faxed to newspapers and radio stations.
We have worked pretty hard to get out the Democratic message, and we are going to continue to do that as long as we are able.
Yes.
And
living.
That's right. That's right. As long as I'm breathing, I'm going to be promoting the Democratic message, because it certainly is a good one. And the Democratic message, of course, is a message about all of us. The thing that I like about Democrats is that we're so cross-ideologic. You know, Democrats are able to cross ideological lines so much easier than other factions within the political system.
Right. Well, basically what you find is every segment of America's traditional values represented
within the Democratic Party.
In the Democratic Party, whether that's liberals or moderates or conservatives. And I think it's a wonderful thing. I really think that it's important for people to realize that how far right-wing the Republican Party has moved. The Republican Party is no longer the party of conservatism. It is now the party of a radical right-wing ideology. And it's entirely different. than it used to be. The conservatism of Ronald Reagan, and that's still represented by John McCain, is largely dead in the Republican Party. And if you really support traditional conservative values, you don't want judicial activism, because right now we have a lot of hard-right judicial activists who have been appointed from since Reagan and even during Nixon's time, comes from that time, who have the same guys that have been distorting.
In fact,
that's
been a very fundamental right-wing plan, this judicial activism, long time.
And it paid off.
That's right.
It's documented very well in David Brock's Blinded by the Right book.
That's right.
You know, we'll talk about it a little bit more soon.
Oh, yeah, we sure will. And in fact, we have our interview section coming up, and we're going to be talking to our guest for this evening's program is columnist William Pitt from WilliamPitt.com, renowned columnist. And we're going to be joining William and his interview coming up right after the break. Current Affairs Democratic Talk Radio is sponsored in part by Gore's Hammer at www.algoresourpresident.com. Gore's Hammer is not a sponsor of Democratic Talk Radio because the election was a close one, nor because Al Gore didn't win, or even because we're unhappy with the Republican administration, though we are, but because the final tally was circumvented when the Supreme Court, Justice Scalia, put a halt to the vote counting in Florida, lest it give the election to the man who actually got the most votes. Our goal is a simple one, to be a voice in an open forum and to help others express their voices, to share news, information, and some fun downloads, and even a few laughs to help us all understand what happened and how we could make future changes, and to keep people thinking, also to keep the truth at the surface, and to offer merchandise to make a future Al Gore candidacy visible and tangible, like shirts, bumper stickers, pins, and much, much more. Please visit our website at Gore's Hammer at AlGoresOurPresident.com. Axem Design Studio designed our site and the Democratic Talk Radio site. Please help support this site and Democratic efforts. All right, welcome back to the program here on Democratic Talk Radio, and our guest for this evening's program is columnist William Pitt. Let's say good evening to William. Hello, William.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you doing today?
Doing very well.
Thanks for joining us.
No problem.
Here on Democratic. Go ahead.
I just said thank you for having me.
It's we're big fans of yours, William. We've been reading your work. We know you write for Truth Out, but we also frequently visit your site, WillPitt.com. And also, I've been reading a lot of your stuff on the Democratic National Committee's FreeDem.com site.
It's a great site.
Yeah, you're a great writer.
Yeah, that's right. We've contributed to it once or twice ourselves, I believe. But it's nice to see that there are folks way out in front and people out there getting this message out, because, you know, the right wing of the Republican Party has just really taken this country in a direction that the average person isn't aware of.
If they're not aware of it, they're directly affected by it.
Yep. There's no question that they're directly affected by it. I think it's affected every man, woman, and child in this country, but they seems to have gone under the radar, whether that was intentional or not. You know, boy, it seems to be.
Well, it's over the radar now if you're watching CNN.
Yeah.
Mess in between Israel and Palestine. To a certain extent, obviously, it's a conflict that goes back about 5,000 years. But on the other hand, when I watch this show and I see these Israeli representatives get on television and talk about all the horrors that are going on there, uniformly they make mention of how much they lament the absence of Bill Clinton and the engagement of an American administration interested in peace over there.
Right. I agree with that. I think Bush's incompetence and the fact that he dropped the ball that Clinton was carrying so well of moving towards peace in the Middle East for the first year, because he was basically sidetracked from raiding the federal treasury for the wealthy for tax cuts and packing the courts with a bunch of right-wing, far-right-wing judicial activists.
Moving towards peace, perhaps, but definitely moving away from the kind of violence that we have seen.
Right.
And this guy, Anthony Zinni, over there. We've got 10 fingers and 11 holes in the dike, and it's gone too far.
Well, the time when they could have done something about it, Bush was asleep on the job. It's an incompetence and inexperience in foreign policy issues we're sharing.
One gets the sensation that these people are terribly, terribly in over their head.
Right.
And one of the websites that I frequent quite often is a website called Democratic Underground.
Oh, yeah, I know it well.
And there's a poster there. I put a question up the other day about how does this new Israeli-Palestine violence affect Bush and Wolfowitz's plans for a war with Iraq. And one poster there by the name of, I think it's, he probably pronounces it Sagan, mm-hmm. responded that the foreign policy apparatus within this administration is so dangerously bad that it would be funny if it weren't so scary, that the one real hardcore policy wonk, foreign policy wonk that they have there, named Condoleezza Rice, mm-hmm. is a foremost and renowned expert on a country that doesn't exist anymore.
Right, she was a expert on the Soviet Union. Yeah, I mean, you cannot look at the Middle East issue or the conflict with the terrorists in Afghanistan, which is not really Middle East, which is, the Near East, probably. You can't look at these two Cold War glasses. I mean, it's absurd.
No, it's more than absurd. It's dangerous, particularly when you start making budget appropriations with a Cold War mindset.
Exactly.
Multi-billion-dollar budget that Bush has put forward, which, by the way, expects a 10% growth in the economy, and, even the most optimistic of economists are seeing only perhaps a 5% growth.
And that only happens, 5% and up only happens under Democratic administrations, Darrell,
exactly.
Actually, most of the economists I've been hearing have been predicting growth rate around 1 and 1.5%.
Right. The budget that he's asking for is aiming at not only Trident submarines and all these, incredible heavy machines.
Yeah. Ballistic missile defense against terrorists.
Program, none of which is going to be effective in a war on terrorism.
Right.
You can't use a Trident submarine in the Hindu Kush.
No. What you need is a bunch of highly skilled security people, and you need a foreign policy that preempts it. I think the way he's handled the recent invasion of Arafat's compound, the way he sided with it in an entirely pro-Sharon Israeli position, instead of being a little bit more even-handed, basically to me says, oh, hey, Palestinian terrorists, don't forget to attack us like the Al-Qaeda ones, too.
Well, it's pretty stupid, too, because if you think that he wants a war with Iraq, throwing over the Palestinians will not earn him any favors in the Arab world.
No, and not only that is those suicide bombers, the Palestinian ones, may start targeting American interests, not Israeli.
Well, the key to this is we're going to become embroiled in this Israeli-Palestinian conflict, to which this is a problem that they must solve themselves. We can show them the way towards peace and help them broker the peace, but this is a problem that they must solve themselves. And for us to become embroiled in the Israeli-Palestinian imbroglio is just going to cost possibly American lives and won't really solve anything.
I've heard a lot of Republicans talking about sending American troops over there.
That's
good.
You watch.
That's the stupidest idea that could be. If Americans are coming home,
do you think that that's going to happen, William?
Well, my thought on the process is that is unfolding right now is I think that Yasser Arafat is going to start yelling and screaming for, you have to bear in mind that this process that I envision depends upon the idea that they want a war with Iraq. In order to pursue a war with Iraq, what they're going to have to do is once Yasser Arafat, if he survives this, starts yelling and screaming for help, I want peace, we need peace, I need peace, help, help, help. If they want a war, if the United States administration wants a war with Iraq, what they will have to do is step in for, if Arafat does exactly what they ask for and make all these claims about don't do suicide bombings, etc., because we need the Arab League support to go after Iraq, we will also need the Arab League
support
to be on our side.
For the Palestinians.
So to be on our side, we have to put troops on the ground in the Mideast between Israel and Palestine.
I think that's really stupid. The point I was trying to say before is if Americans are coming here in body bags from the Middle East, we'll have no one to blame but George W. Bush.
Well, it's already started.
It seems to be the inevitable conclusion based upon the way he's handling this foreign policy.
There is no foreign policy.
I digress. Sorry.
Foreign policy that I can lay my finger on.
There wasn't one before 9/11, and there hasn't been one since, other than what the military action, other than what the military is doing, and that's what the military is doing. It's not really the Bush foreign policy.
Well, the Bush foreign policy before September 11th was a policy based upon business interests.
Serving the real interests.
Oil. Exactly.
But still, with all of this going on, with all the yelling and screaming, and with him mumbling into the microphones out there in Crawford today, one country was, again, not mentioned, and that country was Saudi Arabia.
Right.
Saudi Arabia is the most important country in the world. It's because of their oil and because of the terrorists that they have living within their borders.
As far as the war on terrorism is concerned, it's certainly true.
War on terrorism, whatever you want to call it, will never be won.
It was not really war.
Saudi Arabia is not scrutinized, and they will not be scrutinized as long as there is oil to be had.
Right, and I actually tend to agree with you. I would say that, quite frankly, that I believe that September 11th attacks would not happen if Al Gore had been put in office legitimately like he should have been, because he won the election.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. The Gore administration would have had many faults and many flaws and would have made a lot of people unhappy about a lot of different things, because he's a centrist DLC Democrat, and they
right down the middle. He would have been right with the majority of Americans.
But I do not think that Al Gore would have pursued a foreign policy based upon the needs of the Unocal Oil Corporation.
You're right. He would have pursued a foreign policy based upon the Constitution.
Based upon national security. You know, he wouldn't have called out the dogs. He wouldn't have ignored a lot of very ready threats. He would have taken care of this.
Yeah. See, I think this whole thing can be wrapped up together. It's not part of thing and part of something else. The packing of the courts with the right-wing judicial activists led to Bush being imposed on us as president.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And because of that, the foreign policy screwed up on our national defense, and our national security is under threat. And our country's going bankrupt.
Well, it just seems like he has bumbled his way through his first 2 years of office worse than any president in memory.
Yeah, but you wouldn't know it from listening, would you?
No, not listening to our corporate media.
He has not got through the first 2 years. That's a really sad thing. It's really only been a year and a couple of months.
Seems like it's been 20.
17 months.
It's been 20.
Amazing what has happened in that short.
It is amazing.
Our country has gone downhill at an amazing rate in that amount of time. You know, our position in the world has really declined.
Well, the turbulence of what has happened, especially since the election, and then here we had this huge surplus. Now it's gone, and now we had this huge economic downturn, and then the attack, and now we're now it's the Israeli-Palestinian thing all in an uproar. I mean, what a very turbulent.
Have you noticed? Have
16
you noticed?
Months? Is that what it's been?
Yep.
Have you noticed that since? Have you noticed that since that they started talking about attacking Iraq, that oil prices have started going back up dramatically?
No, that's been happening. The largest two-week spike in oil prices in the history of oil prices.
Because they're creating insecurity in the oil market by all this war talk against Iraq, like the production could be taken out of the world supply and maybe some part of the rest of the Middle East.
Right, and they got to make
and
sure
the
they
prices
get,
are going up. And
they got to make sure they get their profits in.
Right, the old big oil companies, you're getting their treasuries packed, and they're packing Republican campaign coffers.
And what's all tells you together. Is that who this administration is looking out for?
Themselves.
and their backers.
And their bankers and their campaign contributors.
Well, you know, speaking of the campaign, Mr. Pitt, there's some very interesting domestic news about the campaign finance reform legislation that very quietly the president signed this week.
It was interesting how he went into a closet, turned off the light, closed his eyes, and signed it.
I think Cheney was in there with a flashlight, wasn't he?
Blue flag.
I think so. They were in the. Yeah, I think Cheney was in there with a flashlight, and Condoleezza Rice, I heard, was in there as well.
Condoleezza Rice was out riding around on her oil tank.
It sure looked that way, didn't it?
Yeah. Well, you know, and then what is it? As soon as he, the ink wasn't even dry on the legislation, he pops in a jet to go to a $4 million fundraiser down in Georgia.
Well, everybody's doing that. The Democrats are doing that right now.
Well, yeah, that is true. But
the curtain's coming down on the soft money.
And we better do it now.
Yeah. Right.
We better do it now because they're doing it.
And didn't we just get the biggest contribution on record here recently?
God bless the Power Rangers.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Steve and I talked about Mr. Saban last week.
Yes.
$7 million.
Let me interject a word of warning about this campaign finance reform thing. I think in the short term, it's a marvelous victory. It's a congressional victory. We beat back the forces of right mouthpieces. And more importantly, we've cost Bush a pretty significant amount of support in his hard right base. You listen to Rush Limbaugh frothing at the mouth about the fact that they signed this thing.
Ken Starr's in court.
All the people on Free Republic yelling and screaming about it. Oh, I'm voting for Buchanan, et cetera, et cetera. This is a good thing. You know, this basically is all of this nonsense propaganda about the death of free speech.
coming
back to haunt them.
But
the downside of this, the long-term downside that I fear, is that when this thing gets to the Supreme Court, it's going to run into a whole bunch of very well-articulated arguments based on the Supreme Court case Buckley v. Vallejo.
Right.
And what is going to wind up happening, I fear, is that all of the good parts of campaign finance reform are going to get gutted, and the only thing that will be left standing is the boosting of the hard money contribution limit from $1,000 to $2,000,
yeah,
which is going to be a massive windfall for the
You know, you're probably right about that.
Well, it could be.
Especially considering this Supreme Court.
The right is going to run back into Bush's arms and declare him and his people a tactical genius.
Yeah. It takes a major twisting of that Supreme Court ruling to do that. The Supreme Court ruling specifically stated that money was not free speech.
Right, no, there's a bunch of things in there that I think it's a 50-50 break.
The only thing that they can go by is that the Supreme Court had ruled that a person's own money cannot be limited in the expenditure, but not money donated to a third party, because the third party speech is not the individual speech.
The Supreme Court can go by whatever the Supreme Court wants to go by.
Right. They ignored the Constitution when it put Bush in office.
Yeah.
You know.
They do pretty much whatever they want.
Well, so Mr. Pinto, what are you writing about recently? What's on your mind now?
On my mind right now, I'm gearing up to write something about the coming war with Iraq.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's coming in the fall like a lot of the pundits are saying?
I would say May.
Really?
I would say even sooner than that. There are a number of news stories about how we are vastly increasing our military presence in that region.
The first resolution that was passed on the so-called war on terrorism,
September 14th,
is specifically not a declaration of war, and doesn't it specifically call for them to get congressional approval for an attack on Iraq?
Actually, in the rush to give the president everything he wants, to do whatever he wants, wherever he wants, the September 14th declaration, insofar as I have been able to parse the language, says that he can pretty much declare war on anybody that serves as a threat, a terrorist threat against the United States. So in order to go, they're going to have to...
But they haven't documented that.
...put some sort of proof on the table as to why Saddam Hussein is a threat and why he's a terrorist helper, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Either real or imagined, that proof will come. And there is a constitution, or at least congressionally, because of that September 14th.
They're going to have to document it. They're going to have to document it.
They'll put something together.
Yeah.
They're already in the process. And whether it's real or it's not real, it's coming and they're going. And the only voice that was raised against this in the Senate that I heard on September 14th was John Kerry's, who said that this is not an open-ended declaration for him to go fight anybody that he wants to.
No, it's not.
But...
That's how they're looking at it.
The language of that that September 14th declaration
opens it wide open.
Speaks otherwise, if they are able to legitimately or illegitimately put forth some sort of proof that there is in fact a threat.
Well, I tell you, the language doesn't say that, really. If you look at, the language may say that, what you're saying, but it's not meant to be interpreted that way. The debate specifically excluded that.
Yeah, well, they might not meant to interpret it that way, but
When courts, federal courts, review legislation, they do go through the debate stuff, and that was very clear that was not the intentions of the people who passed the bill.
Well, I am on my computer as we speak, just sort of looking at the...
But, if you go through the debate, I heard some of the debate, I watched some of it on C-SPAN, and that was specifically not an open-ended declaration for him to attack nations.
And that passed on you said the 14th, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, and of course, my big concern is that this administration has very little respect for separation of powers content in the Constitution. All these recess appointments are a really good example of that.
No, sure.
I
think that when all of this is said and done, it's going to be very interesting. When all of this is said and done, James Jeffers is probably going to go down as one of the most important people at the beginning of the 21st century.
Yeah, I think he's gone a long way to saving our democracy. Yeah, because I think it's under threat.
Have you read his statement of conscience?
Yes, I have.
Yes, I have.
It was remarkable.
In fact, we keep that one on file. because it's just such a great piece.
It's a great historical document.
Mm-hmm, it sure is.
Well, I'm looking here at an article from MSNBC from around about September 14th. quote, September 14th resolution is the functional equivalent of a declaration of war. Congress voted to give Bush's authorization to, quote, use all necessary and appropriate force against those nations, organizations, or persons he determines planned, authorized, committed, or aided the terrorist attacks.
Wow.
The resolution also allows Bush to order attacks on nations or groups that harbored or helped the planners of the attacks.
This is specific to that attack.
Yeah.
And so it's not terrorism in general. There is no direct tie between Iraq and this September 11th.
One would say so.
Nor is there a tie between the Palestinians and the September 11th.
But then again, that's the truth. Come on.
Yeah, well, the truth doesn't mean much when it comes to the Bush White House, does it?
Absolutely.
You know,
that's the scary part of all this.
That's
is that
part about all this?
Right.
Is,
see,
you don't know which way is up, and it's a really sort of a facile leap that you've heard. You know, we've heard too many times before in too many situations. Bringing up George Orwell in 1984, but when you think about the basic aspects of Orwell's idea of a totalitarian American state, it involved a war against a shifting enemy. Mm-hmm. It involved a faceless, single foe who could never be caught, who kept being brought up in order for people to continue to stoke their hatred.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have our Goldberg, and we have our war with Eurasia, war with Oceania, war with whoever is available.
Mm-hmm.
It moves from place to place to place, and those who would stand against it have difficulty finding their rhetorical footing, because every other week it's a different target, it's a different set of circumstances, and it never stops shifting. And all the while, we have this missing man.
Mm-hmm. Boy, well, tell you what, it has rang that bell pretty loudly, if you ask me.
It's kind of silly to make the comparison, because it's sort of a, you know, people will say, ooh, this is Chicken Little. But
let's make it a little more concrete. I know you've written a little bit about David Brock's Blinded by the Right.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that kind of lay out their tactics?
In a remarkably clear fashion. I think the three books that, if people want to understand the end of the 20th century and everything that happened right up to and including the election, there are three books that need to be read in this order. Joe Connison's book, The Hunting of the President, followed by the new book by Joe Klein, The Natural, and last but not least, David Brock's book, Blinded by the Right. Read those three books in that order.
Okay.
To understand exactly
what has happened.
What is happening, what is at stake, what has happened, and how all of the people who spent all of this time ripping the Constitution and the very underpinnings of our democratic process are now sitting in all the available catbird seats in the administration. I mean, this administration is made up of Federalist Society lawyers who helped get Ken Starr.
That's right.
The position that set this whole thing rolling.
I think Theodore Olson's appointment, which was another recess appointment, is a great example of that.
Mm-hmm.
He's mentioned prominently in this.
Denied, you know, right with his bare face hanging out that he had anything to do with the Arkansas Project during his confirmation hearings. Remarkably.
And it's all over the book. It's all over the book. And, you know, isn't that perjury?
And he totally got away with it.
Well, do you know what's interesting? Somebody brought this up. Thus far, there aren't many people stepping forward to point by point refute David Brock's assertions. As a matter of fact, Jonah Goldberg on some TV show the other day pretty much all but admitted that it was true.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about libel and slander laws against public officials, it's really, really, really difficult for anybody who is a public official to bring a libel or slander suit against anybody who has said anything about them,
mm-hmm.
because the rules for public officials are so broad.
Right.
But if you can prove active malice, that this was not somebody just spouting off, but someone who had an agenda, someone mm-hmm. who's seeking to destroy a career, etc., etc.
Well, it seems that Blinded by the Right spelled that out pretty clearly.
That is the cut of my jib, is that if people want to take David Brock's book and run with it, it lays out a long, detailed, lengthy, name-laden case for active malice.
Right.
So one might drop a memo on the.
And when you start looking at some of these people, I mean, I'm finding alarming stuff. Isn't that Norquist, I believe, one of the principal guys who was like Grover Norquist. Right, now.
Helper of terrorists.
Right, and he's the guy that shared the office with a group that was just raided by the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
That was raising money for the Republicans and apparently for terrorists in the Middle East, mm-hmm. or allegedly, you know, according to the FBI.
The line between those two entities is getting ever dimmer.
What I want to know is wonder, and this is purely speculation on my part, but I wonder whether these anthrax attempted assassinations of Leahy and Tom Brokaw and Tom Daschle, if they couldn't be tied to the...
Well, we're going to find out.
Or will we?
We're going to find out, because that just... That can't stay hidden for too long.
I don't know. I really wonder where it's coming from. I don't see any move on Ashcroft's... And you can kind of pick it up listening to Fox News with all their spins. Any move at all to move against the far-right terrorist.
Well, no, we don't, but that makes the 2002 midterm elections all the more important.
Well, you just segued very nicely into the next question that I wanted to talk to you about, Mr. Pitt. So what do you think of the upcoming 2002 elections, and what are the Democratic prospects, and what are your hopes?
I think they're pretty much... the most important set of, except for the 2000, the 2000 election was the most important election that we didn't know was coming.
Mm-hmm.
The 2004 election is, of course, going to be a battle royal on a bunch of different levels, if in fact it happens at all.
Yeah, if we're lucky enough to get our vote.
These 2002 midterm elections, as we're staring at it now with the benefit of hindsight, with an understanding of where this country is headed, the 2002 elections are, without doubt, the most important elections that we've had in this country in the history of this nation.
Well, I noticed an alarming thing coming up on the elections is the recess appointment of the chief legal counsel for the Republican National Committee to head the Federal Election Commission.
And who is he?
I don't.
They can steal in only so many places.
There's so many places they're working on it. That's what I'm worried about.
You know, what alarms me so much is they effectively got away with it the first time. And, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised by something happening this time and the next time.
That's where we come in.
Right.
The good liberals, Democrats, people in this country who want to see some sort of justice returned to the process do not only have to support their candidates by voting, do not only have to support their candidates by volunteering for somebody, particularly in a district that's up for grabs.
Mm-hmm.
Democrats and people of good conscience in this country who do not want a repeat of 2000 need to, on election day, go out and watch.
Observe. That's right.
Especially down in Florida, stand there and yell until their voices are hoarse exactly what the rules are.
And documented.
That's right.
You know,
document it all and take it to court.
Forms of identification to vote here. If your name is not on the list, come and find me and we will figure out why.
Right.
We need an army of individuals, not unlike the United Nations election watchers who go to other countries to see their democratic.
You know what? It would not be a bad thing to have foreign observers
together. It has come to this, and it needs to happen.
It's absolutely vital.
And you
come out in enough force and go to every polling place and make it understood clearly that we are not going to let that crap happen again.
Yeah.
And I want to stand a good chance of offsetting any criminality that may be in the works.
Yeah, and I want to say not just liberals, because I don't even consider myself a liberal.
No,
I'm a moderate conservative. Because you have to realize that these Republicans, these right-wing Republicans running it, are not really conservatives. They're radical rightist.
Yeah.
You know, they left conservatism long ago. There's only one major voice of conscientious conservatism who has the most ethical man left in the Republican Party, and that's John McCain.
Mm-hmm.
He's a real conservative. Ronald Reagan was a conservative.
Right.
But these guys are not conservatives. They are far to the right of conservatives. They don't want to conserve anything. They want to put a new far right-wing agenda as the dominant political culture in America.
You know what agenda that is? It's the same agenda that that Mr. Pitt touched on earlier. It's the federalist agenda.
Yep.
Yes, it is. And there's nothing conservative about this.
Oh, let me tell you something.
Any conservative movement that seeks to aggrandize the power of the federal government is in and of itself a lie.
One that wants to impose judicial activism. You know, one that wants to undermine the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Traditional processes.
Free speech, even, you know.
Mm-hmm. And what does selling out totally to big business interests have to do with the conservatives?
Nothing. Well, it has to do with they can argue that it's part of the free market.
Hey, Steve, back up from the microphone just a little bit.
Okay, corporate monopoly is not promoting the free market.
No, it isn't, but that's how they play it off.
That's the spin. Yeah. That's not the reality.
Corporate monopoly is how you centralize power.
Right.
Corporate monopoly is how you centralize power within the media,
right.
Centralize power within the banking industry,
yeah.
Knock down regulation after regulation.
It's a corporatist agenda. And the last time there was a strong corporatist economic agenda in Italy, it was called fascism.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's why it is absolutely vital that we take this election back at the ground level. That's why William Pitt just said that this election is probably one of the most important elections that we've ever faced. The one that we had before that and was taken from us was the most important up to this point. But this next one is just as important, if not more important.
We have to consider the implications. A Democratic Senate and a Democratic House can thwart all of these ridiculous policies that Bush has.
And ridiculous they are.
They can thwart all of these right-wing crazy judges that they are seeking to bring forth. They can bring forth subpoena after subpoena after subpoena and find out what happened on September 11th.
And also, we can go back even further, Mr. Pitt. We can go back and find out what happened on Election Day.
That would be nice.
And here's something else we can do, and I just learned this today, that after the 2002 election, all these recess appointments can be nullified.
Can be pulled right back.
All of them.
There's no measure.
Because they can only stay for the life of that Congress, which in 2002 is over.
There's no measure of how important this is. There's none. It is simply the biggest thing it's huge.
Well, William Rivers Pitt, with your help and your continued keeping us informed and helping us out and being active like you are, we know that you're going to keep the truth out and do all you can in the future as well.
You too. Thank you very much.
Can you tell us a little bit more about your website before you go?
Well, willpitt.com. It is just a store. I spent a long time writing for other publications, basically anyone who would publish my stuff. And I'd heard from a number of people that they were frustrated because I couldn't find everything that I'd written all in one place.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to build a house and put everything together under there. And they're all of the essays that I've written in the last 2 or 3 years are there, either archived or linked on a separate page. One of the most important things I have going on the website is the Ashcroft Opposition List, which is not so much a petition as a statement of conscience. After John Ashcroft got into the well of the Senate and proclaimed that anyone who frightens people with the ghosts of lost liberty is harboring terrorists.
Oh, I know.
If you go against the program...
Yeah, that's what we call us all traitors.
Steve and I did a whole hour on that speech.
So I put together an essay about it and put together a statement of conscience saying, if you stand against this, if you are reviled by the idea that you are a terrorist for standing upon your right to dissent and your right to free speech, send me your name, I'll put it on the list, and it is growing day by day.
I wonder if I've signed that one, because I've signed quite a few.
You should go look. It's possible. I've lost track of the specific names.
Yeah. Okay. For folks listening, that's Will, W-I-L-L, Pitt, P-I-T-T, .com. And I go there often.
All right. Well, once again, we thank you for taking the time to talk to us, William Pitt, and we'll look forward to talking to you again real soon.
I hope so. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye.
And we'll be back with more Democratic Talk Radio right after the break.
Hi, I'm Morgan Freeman. America's national park system is one of the best ideas our country ever had. And I've got a lifetime of memories to prove it. But our parks are in trouble. Inadequate funding and other pressures are risking some of America's most awe-inspiring places. To help, visit www.americansfornationalparks.org or call 1-800-NATPARK. 1-800-NAT-PARK. There's just too much to lose.
And we're back. Welcome to Democratic Talk Radio. I'd like to thank, once again, William Rivers Pitt for taking the time to talk to us. Great interview, Steve.
No, he is a wonderful writer, and he really knows his stuff, doesn't
mm-hmm.
he?
He sure is. And like you said, you know, he's been writing these essays and getting the word out for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah,
you know, he was on the front end.
Yes, he was, and he's not the only columnist that most of you are not being able to pick up in your newspapers that we're going to be having on. Don't you have Tommy Eats coming on here?
Tommy Eats from the Left is Right.
Yeah, that's his website, right?
That's his website, and it's also the name of his column, the Left is Right column.
Yeah, he's an African-American writer from Austin, Texas.
Austin, Texas, that's
and
correct.
And boy, does he know George W.
Yes, he does, and knows all about the Bush policies, and because, believe me, what happened to Texas is what the Bush administration is going to do to this country. And look at the economy in Texas. Look at their state of affairs down there.
Well, you know, they ran... The Bush brothers have run Florida and Texas
right
far into the red, you know, that I don't think they'll ever see daylight.
And that's been their policy. They're looking out for their corporate constituency.
And that's what I want to also, that makes a nice little segue, and I want to talk about the radical right Republicans, or not conservatives, because Republicans, traditionally, real Republican conservatives, believed in fiscal conservative policy. And who are the fiscal conservatives today?
The Democrats are the fiscal conservative, are the ones who were fiscally responsible. We're the ones who wanted to lower the national debt.
We're the ones that wanted to pay it off.
Pay it off.
Instead of run it up.
Have a surplus, lockbox on the Social Security surplus.
And what are they doing to Social Security today?
Oh.
Where's the money going?
Oh, okay. Now, I heard the Democratic message today, and this is a true story, folks. And your payroll taxes right now.
Social Security and
right.
And
from your last
Medicaid
paycheck this week, this
right.
week's paycheck, your payroll taxes that are designated for the Social Security Trust Fund were going directly towards pay cuts for wealthy individuals and large corporations.
That's the Bush economic program. That's his tax
That's
program.
What's happening right now.
That's the big fund that they want thank you for, right?
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's the one that they say that was bipartisan. That, what, 12 Democrats voted for it?
Right.
12 badly...
Misled
Democrats.
Right. And because they threw a little bit of chump change in immediate tax refunds to the Democrats. So the Democrats said that should be the only tax cut. It's the immediate thing to prime the pump, and then look and see where our budget is going before we started doing the rest.
I want to repeat that again, Steve, for our listeners. Your payroll taxes right now are going to pay for the tax cuts for wealthy individuals and large corporations. That money's supposed to be going to Social Security, Steve.
You know what? I have an idea. If they want to save a little bit of government money and still pursue the same agenda, why don't we all just write checks to Exxon,
Enron,
GM,
GE,
Carlyle Group.
I think Jack Welch needs my check, doesn't he?
General
from GE?
Yeah. I think he needs some of it. And maybe all the TV networks.
You know, now, Steve, you know, Steve and I are making light of this, but folks...
It's nothing to be funny.
This is not funny at all.
It's not funny.
Because we have elderly citizens in this country that aren't getting the kind of resources that they need, whether it's on Social Security or Medicaid. And the reason is because, although we had these huge surpluses, the Republican Party has given it all to the rich.
The Social Security money should be set aside... for the Social Security system is scheduled to go bankrupt. And the reason it's going to go bankrupt is because the federal government is taking all that money to subsidize the annual budgets because they gave the income tax money to the wealthy.
Yep. That's right. And I think it's shameful.
You're going to pay for this in your old age.
I think it's shameful, Steve.
Orphans and widows get money from the Social Security.
And these are people like perhaps your grandpa or your grandma. Or, you know, folks, we're talking about people that are my age, me.
Or you. What if you have an accident and get disabled and you need Social Security money?
And you know what? I'm a good American. I've worked all my life, paid my taxes.
Yeah, but your taxes went to the large corporations. You don't get the money. Not under Bush's agenda.
I tell you what, folks. That's not the kind of America that I think most Americans envision, Steve.
It's not fair, it's not equitable, it's not balanced government.
And I tell you what, we can't have any more of this, man. We got to throw these at rascals out of here.
The wealthy should have a voice in government, but it shouldn't be the only.
Their vote doesn't count any more than mine does.
No, and they should have a voice, but they shouldn't have the only
voice. An important voice.
They shouldn't have the only voice.
Right.
That's what you got now.
And now it's purely one-sided, Steve.
And one thing we didn't bring up with Will Pitt, I would have liked to have, is this energy task force papers they release.
Now, with the words, everything is, blanked, or they have a word for it.
Adapted,
thank you very much.
Adapted. Embedded in this stuff. Look, you're supposed to only take out information out of these and black out the pages when national security is at stake. Not a single one of these energy officials have a national security clearance.
Not one. And you know what I also found was interesting? Not one environmental group was looked at during all of this?
Not one
or consulted. Or consumer or environmental group was consulted at all. Period. None.
Not only the environmentalists, but no consumer group. I hate folks, all of us that are paying these high energy bills and natural gas, remember last, not this winter, wasn't too bad, but the one before? You remember yesterday when you went to the gas pump, you know, and you filled up your car and it was a dollar a gallon a couple months ago and now it's not anymore? Hey, you guys didn't have any voice at all in Bush, Cheney, the far right-wing Republican oil energy program.
It's like it's almost like the government is squeezing us for all of the fuel money that they possibly can.
The oil companies are.
That's kind of how I feel about
the oil
companies. It's not the oil company. I feel like it's the government doing it because the government is an oil company, in my view, now.
Right now, it is. I was going to say that. There's really no difference right now. The part of the government that's controlled by the Republicans is no different than an oil company, except that it's also a defense company. And it's also, you know, any other kind of large, big business.
The average person might ask, well, why have they done this? I'll tell you why they've done this. It's greed and power.
Yeah. And they're selling the whole thing with
those
big propaganda campaign. Yep. You know, the GOP, greed, oppression, and propaganda. They're taking away your civil liberties. They try to intimidate you. They try to steal your vote. They
try to tell you you have no right to speak your mind.
Right. And tell you to shut up or you're a traitor.
Yep.
You know, and these people are attacking and undermining the Constitution, the separation of powers, you know, separation of church and state. They're pursuing an agenda that, frankly, if it was coming from a couple hundred years ago, they would be Tories.
Tyrannists.
They would be Tories.
Right.
They would have been the people who want King George, not President George. You know, what does these guys want? They want absolute power under any circumstances.
Well,
they have no ethics, no morals. You know, they're promoting a program of decay. They're liars and traitors, in my book. And I know that sounds extreme, but that's what they are. They're cowards and liars and traitors.
They care much more about their own self-interest and their own lining their own pocketbook and making sure that their children have all the billions that they could possibly want. They could care less about the average American, what he's going to do for a job, how much money he's making, whether or not he's going to get any health care, or whether or not his kids are going to be educated enough. Because look what they've done to education.
And they're not even pro-business. They're only pro-big business.
They're anti-business.
Steve.
That's right.
Hey, this policy is not being put together on Main Street in small-town America.
Right. Don't fool
yourself. Not serving the guy who owns a hardware store, or a pharmacy, or a restaurant. This is, if you're one of those Wall Street hustlers who, do the hype and then sell out stocks and stick all the small guys.
Insider trading
and government contracts for huge amounts of money we don't need. And these are the same guys that didn't want to privatize. They wanted to keep private the airline checkers because even though some of these companies were not even American companies because they were campaign donations.
Yeah. You might cut into their profits a little bit, too.
You know what? I'll give you a good example. Solicitor General Ted Olson, we mentioned before.
Right.
You know, far right-wing guy, recess appointment, just like the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
That there was a little investigation recently in courts, and that finally this court case came up. This mining company, was mining Navajo lands, which the federal government were holding in trust for them. And acting as basically a trustee for this, and they had to negotiated the contract. They were paying the Navajos 15% royalties. The industry standard was 39%.
So there, somebody was getting about what 29%,
24%,
24%
discount.
Discount?
Right. Not 24% of the total. 24% of the aggregate.
So okay. How many millions did this total up to, Steve?
Maybe billions. Well, I believe the court settlement was $470-some million is what the lower court ordered the federal government to pay for breaching their trustee relationship with the Navajo Indians. This happened apparently under Reagan's thing, and the same company that did this mining company, gave tens of millions of dollars to the Republican Party. I mean, isn't it bad enough?
Well, no wonder he didn't want to sign the campaign finance reform legislation.
Isn't it bad? Well, Ted Olson's now fighting it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right.
He's fighting it.
And as we said in the interview, there's a very good chance that they could win it.
Here's what I want to say. Didn't we do enough to the American Indians already? that now that we don't have to continue to rip them off with a little bit of pittance that we've left
that we've garnered to them?
That we've left them with? Almost nothing. You mean?
Well, you know this Republican ideology. They will leave no stone unturned, Stephen, to get what they think that is theirs.
I'm an old family here. Crockett family's been here since 1630s, 1640 maybe. I don't know, something like that. It's a little hazy back that far, but it was probably one of the first 1,000 families that came in America. But part of my background, I'm 1/8 Cherokee. I can see both sides of this. I remember when Davy Crockett was defeated as a congressman here in Tennessee because he opposed Indian removal. He opposed the Trail of Tears for the Cherokee. He was defeated by moneyed interest here in Tennessee over that, and for siding with the small guy farmer versus the large land.
You know, money is what makes the American world go round, but it was never supposed to have been the only most important thing that we decided all of our judgments on. That's what the Constitution and the Bill of Rights is for, folks. And the Republican Party has completely forgotten about it.
They're pretty big on using the phrase Christian, but what I see them lacking is Christian compassion, Christian charity, and Christian fairness.
They have twisted the Christian religion into something that it's not, Steve.
They've just used the name.
Well, I think that they've effectively twisted it.
Well, I'm a Christian. I don't buy it.
Well, I know that hurts, but
I'm offended when they use it, the name, because that is not what Christianity is about. Christianity is not about greed.
But how many people buy into their lies about what it means to be a Christian and how only Republicans have Christian values? That's what they feed. That's the spin.
The Bush Republicans are promoting a value system that is anti-Christian. They are. They're trying to impose their will on other people. The so-called Christian right does this. They try to impose their will on other people when God gave us free will. We choose to sin or not sin.
What does Ann Coulter say? You know, that right-wing, ultra-conservative...
She's the one... She promoted genocide of the Indians
right.
as an advance.
She says, if you don't agree with me, we'll either shoot you and put you in prison, something like that?
Something.
My goodness. You know,
over and over, we get ridiculous statements.
It's just unbelievable.
She basically said, the way I interpret it, what she said at one speech to the Oregon Republican, college Republicans, is that Indian genocide was a good thing. It was advanced for Christianity. Hey, I'm a Christian. That was not advanced for Christianity. It was not. You know, you do not promote Christianity with the gun and the sword.
Well, for Christians, they take on this dog-eat-dog Darwinist mentality when it comes to everything else. Have you noticed that? They just gobble everything up that gets in their way. It's just
The
so-called Christian right.
Because that is not Christians.
And it's not.
Christians are nothing.
It isn't.
Christians give.
Are compassionate.
Christians love. Christians care.
That's right, Steve.
Christians forgive.
That's right.
Christians do not judge. Judging another person.
But
okay, now this is
important. They come out and they get in front of the microphone and they say the exact same things that you just say, but when it comes to enacting policy, they do the exact opposite.
They judge all the time. How many times do they attack other people's morality?
Okay. Oh my gosh! Let's give a quick history lesson about the '90s, about how the Clintons were immoral and deceitful, and yet they couldn't find anything about them.
Right.
Nothing evidentiary. Nothing.
I mean, Bill aired with Monica, and asked for forgiveness and got it from God and his wife. Now, who is anyone else to judge?
I guess the Senate and the right-wing Republicans.
Now, here's what I will say. Okay, is. Judging other people, and by Christian doctrine, is reserved to God. And anybody who usurps the rights of God really is not a very good Christian. Okay? These guys who are judging things really need to go look in a mirror, and they need to go home and read their Bible and pray for forgiveness. Okay? Because they're doing a horrible damage to our democracy.
And themselves.
And to their Christian faith and to their own souls.
Steve, we have a... just about effectively used up all of our time for this hour here on Democratic Talk Radio. And, of course, it's always a pleasure talking to you. Enjoy it every Saturday. We hope that you'll return with us here on Democratic Talk Radio on its next program. I'd like to welcome once again our listeners down in Jacksonville, Alabama, WNSI, and hope that...